Coming up on podcast 1256, the Lucid Air Dream Edition. Deliveries appear to be underway. I'll tell you what I know. Stick around. Also coming up today, bit of a bumpy weekend for Tesla. Elon Musk tweeting that they're going to roll back their full self-driving beta program. We have the ID3 going on sale in China, a date for the VW ID5, GTX, and more batteries from China. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. First one of the week, Monday 25th of October. My name is Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. We'll start with a video recommendation. This one dropped on the 22nd, so I'm a few days late with this, but it's been watched 2.5 million times already, so it's a popular video. Marques Brownlee, otherwise known as MKBHD. His YouTube channel is rather popular. He's been given a Rivian to drive for 24 hours. And you would, if you were the press department of Rivian, you'd find someone like him. He's a EV fan. He owns a Model S Plaid with the yoke steering wheel. He talks about EVs a lot. Of course, he's a tech YouTuber, so you would give him a car. He loves it. He says he's got it for 24 hours, and it's a very hyped vehicle. But he says the most interesting of all the vehicles coming out of EV startups, thanks in part to their funding of Amazon and Ford. Basic specs are the one he's got. He says quad motors, 21-inch all-terrain wheels, 314 miles of range, 0 to 60, 3 seconds flat. He calls it hilariously quick for a pickup truck. And then this is the launch edition. So he has the adventure package, which includes a lot of the premium interior finishes. It has the off-road upgrade and all of the options. It starts at $70,000. He says it can be over $90,000 if you fully spec it, though, so definitely premium, but it's packing a lot of stuff that makes it feel worth the price. I'll pop a link to YouTube in the show notes. Elon Musk tweeted over the weekend that Tesla is rolling back full self-driving beta. Tesla is dialing back its FSD program. At the moment, CEO Elon Musk saying yesterday on Sunday after discovering software bugs in a new batch of software in the beta program. Tesla has rolled out a new version of its driver assistance software to an expanded group of its drivers, those that were 99 points or above on their safety score. But Elon Musk saying it proved problematic and they're working on fixes, according to the WashingtonPost.com. Users reported sporadic issues like hard braking events, forward collision warnings, and system misfires that weren't present in previous versions. The tweet from Mr. Musk was this: regression in some left turns at traffic lights found by internal QA in 10.3, fix in work, releasing tomorrow. That was what he tweeted. He said, seeing some issues in 10.3, so rolling back to 10.2 temporarily. Please note this is to be expected, he said. With beta software, it's impossible to test all hardware configs in all condition with internal QA, hence public beta. So he's defending there the essence of putting your software into the public to let them do the work of your testers, right? While several posters online said that the new update introduced phantom forward collision warnings, others noted, including a disappearing auto steer option, traffic aware cruise control problems, autopilot panic, according to TheVerge.com. It's unclear, they say, how common these problems are and which ones caused the rollback, but Mr. Musk responding to a tweet about auto steer saying the company is working on it. Well, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration also saying earlier this morning on Monday, it was aware of reported changes to FSD beta and had contacted Tesla to request more information. And meanwhile, the other body, the NTSB, they're the ones without regulatory kind of governance, if you like. They can't make car makers do things. The National Transportation Safety Board chairwoman is called Jennifer Homendy, and she called on Tesla to change the design of their driver assistance systems to stop it being misused by drivers. She wrote to Elon Musk, and the letter, which TechCrunch has viewed, expressed concern that Tesla has yet to implement recommendations that the NTSB issued 4 years ago. The urgency to address those safety recommendations has increased now that Tesla is rolling out more automated driving functions through the FSD beta. TechCrunch.com writes that the NTSB can only make recommendations and has no authority to enforce, make laws, or make policy. Homendy noted that it sent five other automakers that have vehicles with Level 2 driving assist some recommendations to apply in terms of the way that it engages and alerts the driver. Those five other Automakers over the years have all responded to the NTSB and told them the action they're planning to take or were taking to better monitor driver engagement. According to this letter that she sent to Elon Musk, the only car maker that's never responded to her is Tesla. They refuse to engage in the process. And again, there's two sides to every story. Like, you know, why should they? They don't have to. You could say the other side of the story is if you look at something like the air safety. So if you create an atmosphere of non-blame, right? So if you don't attack people, but you work with corporation and say to Tesla and all the car makers, if you share your information publicly, transparently, there'll be no finger pointing when things go wrong, but we all get safer. And that's how the air industry works. And there's been no fatal accidents in the US for the last decade. Nobody's lost their life with air travel. And that is because of transparency and sharing of information. And when things go wrong, an open policy of investigations. And that would be the NTSB's argument, I guess, to Tesla, which is, hey, stop holding all of your cards close to your chest. If you want to share the data, we can all learn from it, like the other car makers are doing. So, hey, two sides to every story. I'm sure everyone's got an opinion on that. But it's, you know, it's interesting they don't play by the rules. But hey, have they ever done? Let's talk about Lucid next. Headline story, the Lucid Air appears to be ramping up for delivery right around the corner. Lucid released a photo of a vehicle carrier with the first six cars leaving their factory. Now, why would Lucid release this photo? Well, we guess that these are the first customer cars of the Dream Edition that are going to be delivered hopefully sometime this week. Lucid saying a month ago, first deliveries will be in October. Well, that's this week. The production of the Lucid Air started on September 28th in Arizona at their Casa Grande facility, and it's been a month now of ramping up. They have 13,000 reservations for the Air, and they're going to make 520 of the first Dream Edition, according to Inside EVs. There's two versions of the Dream Edition. You either get the range or the performance version. You know, I'd take either. And after which, Lucid will move to more regular types and the more affordable versions, like the Air Grand Touring, the Air Touring, and the Air. Hey, I can't wait for those first customers to get their cars. And hopefully a few of those are the kind of people that, hey, may post a picture or a YouTube video. Sure, lots of people aren't attention whores and just want everybody looking at them. So lots of people won't, but hopefully some people will, just for the rest of us, because they're cool cars and we want to see them. The first Rivian R1T deliveries are underway. I think they're making about two a day of those. The ramp is on, but the ramp is slow. Let's talk about Volkswagen's ID3 and their Chinese joint venture, SAIC VW, just launched sales of the ID3, which, of course, is a car that many parts of the world have had for a very long time. Three variants on offer, but prices are starting at 160,000 yuan. That's 21,000 euros. So this is the story, right? As reported recently, the ID3 is being produced locally by SAIC Volkswagen. Electrive.com says that, according to the EV website CNEV Post, sales began on Friday. The entry-level variant costs 21,000 euros. Two more variants cost around 23,000 euros each. The portal doesn't provide details on those variants, but media reports say that both models have 125 kilowatts motor, and it's the 58 kilowatt-hour battery. That's the medium-sized battery. Hey, look, the story here, I think, if I'm interpreting this right, there is a VW ID3, which is a heck of a car, by the way. I've had one. I've had one in my driveway. I had it for, was it 1 month or two? Blimey, my brain fades. But a great car, and I really enjoyed my month in the VW ID3. But it's on sale for 21,000 euros equivalent in China. So it sits in a really interesting price point. Not a premium car like a Tesla Model 3, but a lot cheaper, but still attainable for many people. And so we'll be watching the sales of that really closely. Talking of VW, the ID5 GTX is arriving. We've now got a date, 3rd of November. How do we know? Thanks to Twitter. Volkswagen on Twitter said, "Are you ready for a Berlin night?" Our new VW ID5 GTX is the ideal companion. Elegant, expressive, and electrifying like Berlin itself. Watch as it shows off its powerful body in front of the Berlin Victory Column. Don't miss our world premiere. So, I guess maybe a little lost in translation there, but poetic language nonetheless. Right, coming up very soon, we will talk about why now could be a really good time to sell your used car and why hydrogen cars are being recalled by Hyundai. Stick around, it's on the way. Now we'll talk about Great Wall Motor. They backed a battery company called S-Volt, and they're launching some mega expansion plans. S-Volt, which we don't talk about too much on this podcast. They're a Chinese EV battery maker, really big company though, carved out of Great Wall Motor. For the first time, have just showed up on the global top 10 list of EV battery makers in the last month. Well, actually, in the month of August, I think it was. According to data announced by S-Volt and compiled by Gasgoo, they released their battery capacity plans and their first 10 months of the year's worth of announcements. So these are battery plans they're going to be building. 182 gigawatt hours of capacity coming soon. 80 gigawatt hours of capacity increase announced this year alone. Investment of $4.5 billion equivalent. The project that they are going to build in somewhere called Chengdu, the biggest one they've signed off so far in terms of battery capacity and investment value as well. So almost, you know, 200 gigawatt hours of battery capacity expansion is planned from that one company alone, S-Volt, which we don't talk about too much, like I say, but I'll pop the Gasgoo article in the show notes if you'd like to read more. Now might be the right time to sell your used EV. If you fancy a brand new one, maybe you can get one from a manufacturer with some good deals. Maybe now's a good time to sell your used EV. I think that's going to be us very soon, actually, because we have our Renault Zoe, our ZE40, second one we've owned, but just a little bit too small for us now that we're a family, now that we're a three, not a two. We need something bigger. And so I think it's a very sad time for us to say goodbye to Zoe number two. But I'm sure it'll go to a very, very nice home. It's just turned 2 years old, just over, actually. And we've loved that car, really looked after it as well. But in the US, according to the Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index, wholesale used cars rose 8.3% in the first half of this month alone compared to September. And if we go into next year, AutoNation CEO Mike Jackson believes demand for used EVs is not going to abate anytime soon. Used car prices soared 37% in the last 12 months alone. Why? Well, global chip shortage has been crunching the supply at the top of the funnel, if you like. So fewer new cars around. That means used car values have been going through the roof. As for EVs, Mr. Jackson is optimistic for the industry. He says there's no turning back. We have exciting EVs already. And whether it's the Mercedes-Benz EQS or GM's new Hummer coming into the market, they are fantastic electric vehicles. We have a portion of our website dedicated to EVs, and we're fully embracing it, he said. So there you go. From AutoNation themselves, used prices up 37% in the last year. So, yeah. I mean, if you have a used EV that you're thinking of selling, or maybe, you know, got plans to buy something new in 2022, now might be a good time to see the price that you can get for it. Over here as well, so I'm not in London anymore. We moved out of London back down to the coast a few years ago now. But I do travel up to London for work, and the today is the expansion of the ultra-low emission zone. It means you have to pay now to drive into basically a large portion of Greater London. So lots of people, all of a sudden, it's a reminder to them, like, oh, hang on a minute, if I want to drive in and I've still got a diesel or a petrol that's not compliant, it's going to cost me this much in fees every day. Right, I'm selling that, I'm buying an EV. So maybe that's how I'll market my Renault Zoe. Maybe I'll put that in the description or something, you know, perfect for the London's ultra low, because it's a great little car with, you know, 200 miles out of range, just a little too physically small for us. But hey, maybe that's how I'll market it. Maybe I'll ask your advice, podcast listeners, of how I should be selling my little Zoe. Next, Hyundai have introduced a compensation program for owners of the hydrogen fuel cell vehicle, the Nexo. Now, 15,000 of them have been recalled. I don't know how many Nexos were sold worldwide in the entire time they've sold it. I'm guessing that might be every Nexo. They've been recalled for quality defects. It recently notified Nexo owners they are introducing a buyback program for those cars. It's going to cost around $34,000 equivalent to replace every single stack in those hydrogen cars that needs replacing. That's enough to buy pretty much a medium-sized sedan. Well, Hyundai will pay compensation based on the car's date of release and the distance travelled for all out-of-warranty Nexos that require a replacement of the stack, which is, you know, basically the car's core operating device, says CareerBizWire.com. Some pretty bad news there. But you want safety first, right? But it's one of those reasons that hydrogen fuel cell technology for personal transport is just a non-starter. Now, for other things, as we'll get onto in a moment, it could be very good, actually, at commercial industrial levels, for bigger vehicles as well, for point-to-point vehicles like ferries, possibly planes and things like that. There are some really interesting use cases for hydrogen, as long as you make it in the right way. But the idea of driving around on a big hydrogen tank, as we can see now, with 15,000 of these units, and just a buyback program, it's just like, just not worth replacing. We'll buy the cars back. That's it, says Hyundai. It just doesn't work for personal transport. And also, you know what? I like charging either at home or where I want to charge. I don't want to go to a hydrogen filling station, because that sounds a lot like a petrol filling station. And there's a lot of people in the world who have a lot to lose that want to ensure that that is maintained to keep you on the hook. No, thank you. Right, next we'll talk about parents in the UK wanting their kids to drive electric. 4 out of every 10 parents want their children to take electric vehicle driving lessons. A survey by Peugeot follows a record number of sales for EVs last month here in the UK, with 32,000 EVs registered in September, says Motor1.com. The study of 1,200 people found 4 out of 10 parents wanting to see their children learn to drive in an EV, 25% saying their children regularly pester them about switching from fossil fuels to zero emission power. Yes, we have faith in future generations. Kids whinge at your parents until they buy themselves an EV. Next, we'll talk about the car hire company Sixt offering their travellers a choice of EVs. Munich-based car rental and ride-hailing firm Sixt will allow travellers to choose either a hybrid or a pure electric vehicle when booking online, or a limousine service. The CO2-efficient models available now in the UK, France, Germany, Italy, Netherlands, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland and Turkey, says businesstraveller.com. Customers can select the EVs when booking trips online or on the Sixt app, and I think this is just the beginning of so many stories we're going to be talking about on the podcast about car rental companies, ride-hailing companies, Uber, Lyft, the rest, all going EV. These stories are going to come thick and fast, trust me. Next, an auto blog article asks the question about service, the upcoming EV disruption that no one's talking about. They say parts and service. Really interesting article. I would class it a long read, by the way, if you're looking for something this weekend when you've got a bit more time. I don't know, maybe when you're commuting or something. I'll pop a link to this story in the show notes, because auto blogs say that the move to EV is a transition that will be felt well beyond the likes of Detroit. Millions of workers at repair shops, at gas stations, oil fields, even farms, will find their jobs affected by what they call economic dislocation of historic proportions. Anyone who thinks this is a transition that's going to go smoothly is fooling themselves. That's according to Michael Robinet, the Executive Director of Automotive Advisory Service IHS Markets. Whether you're making or selling or servicing vehicles, you're involved in an industry of 4.7 million Americans, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Some of those jobs won't go away, but many of them will, and people need to be supported and prepared for the EV transition. Conventional cars will remain on the road for a long time. That will soften the blow, provide a ramp, if you like, or a glide path for those repair shops who don't want to retrain to do electric stuff. But with an average lifespan of 12 years, the trend lines for fossil-powered cars is heading down. The shift will reduce demand for oil. 4.7 million barrels of oil a day by 2040 in the US alone, replaced by electric vehicles. That's according to Bloomberg NEF. About 26% of all oil consumption, roughly equivalent to, I don't know, Brazil and Germany combined. The UAW, the Auto Workers Union, has estimated the shift to electric could lose 35,000 union jobs in the US. They say they're taking a realistic approach, though, but pushing for protections and retraining of workers. That includes commitments that jobs be located in the US at comparable wages and benefits. Really interesting. You know, it's one of those stories, again, I think we're going to be talking about a lot on this podcast over the coming years as well. And it's how to ensure that people's livelihoods aren't lost or they are given the opportunities to know what's coming, not be blindsided, and, you know, retrain if they want to. Next, we'll talk about Royal Caribbean, the cruise ship group, using fuel cells and batteries to power future ships. A new class of ships called the Evolution class, Project Evolution class, will debut in 2023, and they're going to operate using fuel cells, so using hydrogen, and also battery technology and dual fuel engines. They use liquefied natural gas as the main fuel. When they say dual fuel engine with LNG, what's the other fuel? I'm guessing diesel. This whole press release has nothing about diesel in, but I'm pretty sure that if you talk about dual fuel engines and half of it using liquefied natural gas, what's the other fuel you haven't mentioned? This solution using these three different powertrains or sources of hydrogen fuel, also using batteries on the ship as well, means that when ships are in port, they'll be zero emission. My goodness, that's so important. I'm in Dorset, South Coast, Bournemouth, Poole area, if you know it. Next to me is Southampton, where not only all the ships arrive carrying lovely Teslas, but also where the cruise industry is based. And Southampton has a real air quality problem, and probably where I live as well, by just sort of de facto being close to it, a real air quality problem for children growing up in that city. It's not fair what the cruise industry does to areas that they show up in. And I know they're doing a lot to try and clean themselves up, but yeah, dumping stuff in the water, running on diesel, bunker fuel. It's not an industry that is in any way able to hold its head up. Fuel cell systems, like hydrogen-based technology, will supplement the main power supply and carry the ship's load, the total hotel load at least, of 4 megawatts, which will be a large-scale fuel cell installation at sea, the first one in the cruise industry. And using natural gas, liquefied natural gas, does burn cleaner, I suppose, emits less CO2, and particularly, you know, and particularly, pardon the pun, it's the particulates, 97% fewer particulates than the fuel oil which is used on cruise ships. That's the real, real dangerous stuff. And using a battery bank as well to optimise the power system on the ship, also saving fuel. We've booked a cruise for next year, and I don't feel particularly good about it. Like, so many things, right, I'm conflicted of. And that's one of them. That is absolutely one of them. We want to take our son away for the first time since he was a baby. And we want to take him away and see different things. We want to see places like France and Spain. I don't want to fly. We could drive, but I know that a cruise will be self-contained. It'll be good for him. And, man, you just... That impact on the planet of just me booking 3 cruise tickets already annoys me. But we're doing it. So there you go. I guess I'm a hypocrite, really. Right, next we'll talk about India and the UK getting together for a solar grid that covers 140 countries. How will you charge your EV? Some people say on sunshine, and then the detractors say, but what about at night time? Well, India and the UK have a plan. The project is titled Green Grids Initiative. The GGI, the Green Grids Initiative, is under the banner of One Sun, One World, One Grid. One Sun, One World, One Grid. They have stylized it OSOWOG, which is very unfortunate, aiming to harness solar energy wherever the sun is shining on planet Earth. In its 24-hour rotation of its axes, transporting electricity around the world when we need it. The grid is to be developed in 3 phases, writes Quartz India. The OSOWOG project works on the idea that solar energy is sent over high-voltage cables across continents, even under oceans, to the countries that need it. India will be at the centre of the solar spectrum, flanked by the Far East, like Myanmar, Vietnam, Laos, Thailand, etc., and the Far West, so Middle East, Africa, etc. The project will link existing national and regional grids to each other to create multiple intracontinental grids and create, eventually, like their dream, is a single intercontinental, global, connected grid distributing solar power. I think the work needed to bring together 140 countries, the diplomacy, the negotiation, this is not an easy project to do, but I love the fact that for every problem that people throw at renewable power, like, well, what about when there's no wind? What about there's no sun? You know, use wave power because, you know, if there's no more tides in the world, we've got bigger problems than electric cars. So all of those things are being solved really quickly as well. I love it. Such a good story. Hey, question of the week with emobilitynorway.com. And a brand new question for a brand new week. How many of the podcast listeners have changed their electricity tariff after buying an electric vehicle? Did you change your EV tariff, your electricity tariff before you bought an EV? Did you do it afterwards? How many of you regularly change your electricity tariff to get the best deal, if that is indeed possible where you live? Over here at the minute, we've got a real energy crisis. The price of gas has gone through the roof. We make electricity with gas, and therefore electricity prices are huge. So how much interest do you take in your electricity supply, and how you charge your EV? Did you stay on your standard tariff, or have you got the option to shift? As many people know, I have stuck with Octopus Agile, even though they charge me every half an hour, and it is 35 pence a kilowatt hour per unit. It is crazy expensive. I know I should move, but in a way, it's also making me think a lot more about energy and how I charge. Now, overnights have got a little bit cheaper, but still, it's going nowhere at the minute. It's capped at 35p, and I'm paying a fortune for electricity. I know I should move to Octopus Go or Go Faster or something to charge the car overnight, but in a way, it's forcing me through, you know, pain in my pocket, to consume less, and when I consume as well. Isn't that interesting? How many of you listening have changed your tariff after buying an EV, and does it make you think more about electricity supply to your home? Email me your thoughts. I'll read them out on Sunday. The address is hello@evnewsdaily.com. Thanks so much to all of the Patreon family. Couldn't do it without you guys and our premium partners. Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of The Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel, Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, and emobilitynorway.com. Have a good one. See you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.